Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows the only way you'd give a fresh and minted driver a brand new car is if he promises to never drive it. Instead, let him grind the gears and knock over the neighbor's mailbox in something a little more suited to his skill level. And with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, he can safely drive something that's nearly as old as he is. It's not perfect, but it's perfect for him. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At the request of our MVP, he's going to lead us in our new favorite song.
Thank you, Master!
Welcome, everybody, to the Mavs Fanatic Podcast. I'm Taman Turner, and over there is Nick Engstead, Mavs Fanatic writer, co-host of the Mavs Fanatic Podcast, me and Nick.
It's always funny that when one of us starts the podcast, we always say the other one is the co-host.
Yeah, right? And we always say it a little bit differently, but as long as you're engaged, that's all that matters. And you're listening to us on the Almighty Ballers Podcast Network. I love saying that, don't you, Nick?
It's good. It's good stuff.
We have to let
big stuff is coming for that network, too.
Big stuff. Bigly. It's very bigly. And I mean that in a positive way, too. By the way, if you know, our show, you know, we're promoted. You know, we're promoted by the guys over at Draft Daily Fantasy. You guys, you know what? Baseball season's coming up. And after that, football season will be coming up.
Rangers and Cowboys.
Right after that, it'll be basketball season once again.
Bring back the Mavs.
Hockey season once again.
The Stars.
Right? So I have to tell you guys about Draft Daily Fantasy.
Ooh.
Do you play Daily Fantasy? Nick, do you like fantasy sports?
I hate season-long fantasy sports. Let me tell you about season-long
fantasy.
You pick your guys, and you're stuck with them. This year in NFL fantasy, my first pick was Adrian Peterson. My second pick was Doug Martin. And my third pick was A.J. Green, who ended up like missing half the games. It was
so
awful.
Your draft ended up being a dud. But I'll tell you one thing, though. Your draft will not be a dud if you go by playing Draft, D-R-A-F-T, Daily Fantasy. Get this. Your chances of winning on Draft are almost three times better than on FanDuel or DraftKings. The data shows that almost 90% of players lose on DraftKings. On 40% over 40 on FanDuel, it's over 40% of the money goes just to 1% of the players. If you're not a pro and not spending hours a day on fantasy, you should be playing on Draft. That's in capital letters, D-R-A-F-T. You'll win more often. It's statistically proven. On Draft, you do simple snake draft just like the beginning of the season-long league. You can do drafts whenever you want, however you want. They last just for one day, and they take only minutes to complete. So join me. Download Draft right now. Just search Draft in the App Store, and it will come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code ABPN when you download, and you will get a 100% bonus when you make your deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter the promo code ABPN. So, Nick, it sounds like you and I are doing fantasy on you this coming year.
Oh, so they're joining us.
Yeah,
we're going to – okay.
Yeah, they are.
Do we have a limit to how many Mavericks we're allowed to pick?
No, but I'm going to – you know what? They're not, but I'm going to get the guys just so you can.
Which Maverick would you pick in a fantasy? Like, so tonight they're playing the Hawks.
Who would I pick first?
Yeah, it's just one. You get one Maverick.
Dirk Nowitzki.
No. I have to go. You dog.
He's been my favorite player for 18 years.
I think I go with Seth Curry tonight.
That's not a bad answer. I like that answer.
I think I go with that.
I like that answer. I'm going with the face of first because he's been my favorite player for 18 years, going on 19.
We got a great show for you today.
We
got Max Rappaport. We're going to be talking to him about some 76ers news. And he knows all about Nerlens Noel. So he's going to be coming on,
Lord,
giving us some info about Nerlens. No, not Joel Embiid.
Oh, Lord. I'm sorry. We love you, Nerlens. We love you, Nerlens. My mind literally heard Joel Embiid. I've been around you too long.
He knows about both of them. So we're going to be talking about that.
I like Nerlens.
And so here, let's talk to Max. All right, welcome on Max Rappaport. He was named one of Deadspin's worst sports writers of 2016, which is quite an honor. And he does that bad sports writing for Complex Sports, Liberty Ballers. You can also hear him on the Sixers Beat and the Step Over podcast. Max, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Thank you. I will say I've been on a few podcasts as a guest since that came out, and that is pretty much every time how people introduce me as the worst sports writer of 2016.
How much honor do you take in that honor?
I was really happy with it. You know, coming from Deadspin, that was, you know, if The Ringer or, you know, New York Times had rated me that. I may not have felt as good about it, but
yeah.
Coming from Destin, I was pretty happy.
Yeah, and at least they're reading you, you know? Like, at least they know who you are.
Yeah, there's no such thing as bad press.
Agreed. So the press that we wanted to bring you on for is all this talk about the Nerlens Noel trade. Obviously, you talk about the Sixers all the time. You write about them. That's your team. And what was your initial reaction on the Sixers side from this trade? Because from the Dallas side, we loved it. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It was kind of a shock. I mean, I think Sixers fans went through a few stages. When they drafted Nerlens Noel a few years ago, it was going way back to 2013. It was coming off a season in which he was the top prospect in that class. When he tore his ACL, there were still people who thought he'd go first overall in the draft. Ended up falling to six, and the Sixers got him in that big trade that kind of sparked their rebuild, and they traded Jrue Holiday, and people were pumped. And, you know, he came back, and he had a really nice rookie season. The team at that point had drafted Joel Embiid, and there was a thought that, like, okay, maybe these two can work alongside one another. We don't really know what Joel Embiid is yet. And then, obviously, the team drafted Jahlil Okafor after Embiid suffered a second setback.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, I don't want to go into the whole thing about Jahlil Okafor, but I think at that point people were like, okay, we'll see who of these three are keepers and who aren't. And there was a point, like last season, I think, when people were like, okay, well, clearly Noel is one of the keepers, even though he was having a bit of a down year. It's like, it's only what he did his rookie year. Joel Embiid, such a question mark, we don't know. And Okafor is really struggling and punched a dude in Boston and seems unhappy here. And there was a thought that, like, okay, they're going to move Okafor probably for like pennies on the dollar, but that's what will happen. Then the summer hits, they draft Simmons, and Embiid gets healthy. Okafor's still here. And I think the way this season started was kind of bizarre because Noel pretty much was holding out. He came into training camp. Over the summer, he'd made some comments basically saying, like, the team needs to figure this out, you know, because this is three centers isn't going to work, three healthy centers,
which is
totally accurate. And, you know, it seemed almost like a reversal of roles, whereas the year before, Noel had been the good soldier and Okafor had kind of been, you know, there were rumors that he didn't want to be in Philadelphia, I think mostly just because of the center situation and also that the Lakers were, you know, the destination he wanted. But there was kind of a reversal of roles where Okafor actually kind of became a pretty good soldier, and Noel, you know, played that first preseason game and then kind of took himself out because of what they were calling a strained hamstring or something that then became him getting meniscus surgery or a knee cleaning surgery. But, like, there was a point where people were pretty certain that Noel had played his last game as a Sixer earlier this year.
Wow.
Then he came back and, like, kind of worked his way. At first, was like getting DNP'd, and then finally, like, worked his way in the lineup. Had really not been a problem, and started playing really well. And Okafor fell out of the rotation entirely; wasn't playing at all. This is when Embiid was still playing, and people were like, "Okay, well, we don't know if Noel's going to be here long term. Like, maybe they don't re-sign him this summer, or they use him in a sign and trade. But, like, Okafor's definitely the guy out at this point." And they're going to either move forward with Embiid and Noel or just Embiid. And then the Okafor, like, Okafor was pretty much traded, like, a week before the deadline.
Right.
And that was, like, right on track. And then that fell through. And then as the day went on or as, like, it got closer to the deadline, it became, I think people were still pretty confident Noel wasn't going to get dealt, and I was one of those people, because I just thought it would be Okafor. I thought they'd make the Okafor trade first and figure out Noel later, unless they got blown away. And then this trade came out with the Mavs, and I
which
think
did
I
not
was
blow
less
anyone
negative
away.
At first because I was less negative at first because I was like, okay, a top 18 protected first, like maybe that's top 10 protected next year, and like I don't love that value, but that's not terrible if they get what'll amount to like a late lottery pick next year or something. And then it came out that it was 2 second round picks and Justin Anderson, and I was shocked by that just because it seemed, even though he's coming up from free agency, it seemed like a move you didn't have to make right now. It seemed like something you could have waited on, and you could have either chosen to sign Noel in the summer and then trade him later, or sign and trade, it just seemed like the absolute lowest value he had at any time during a Sixers career would have been 2 seconds of Justin Anderson. So I was pretty shocked, not to mention that Okafor is still on the team.
Yeah. Let me ask you a few questions, Max. This is Taman Turner. From a basketball standpoint, I think Mavericks fans are still trying to figure out what we're going to expect from Nerlens Noel. I know we know he's a defensive guy, but what can we expect on the offensive end? And number two, for you guys out in Philadelphia, are you not optimistic about Justin Anderson?
Well, I guess I'll tackle the first question first. I think Noel's improved a lot offensively. One thing that's pretty underrated, and was he played two games for you guys so far, you probably haven't seen it at this point, but he's actually a pretty decent passer. That's like one thing that surprised me and was pretty evident early on. Clearly, he's not much of a, like, with the ball in his hands, isn't going to do much in terms of face up and pass to the basket. But he can kind of be a, well, I don't want to say triple threat, cause he can't do any of the other things. He can be a single threat from a guy, because he can pass.
Yeah, we'll take one.
Yeah, he's pretty decent with that. His jumper has actually been better this year. I mean, he only played 29 games this year for the Sixers, and not a ton of minutes, just about 20 minutes a game. So limited minutes, but his jumper looked a lot better this season. He was shooting high 60s, or he's on the season shooting almost 69% from the free throw line. Like, all that's really improved since he came in. He's still really just like a lob near the basket, garbage bucket, which is fine. That's just what he is. But, you know, I think the comparison to Tyson Chandler is apt in that sense. Like, he might be a guy who later in his career during his prime has a really high field goal percentage and on very few attempts, just because that's his game. And I think that's what he brings defensively, I think, is valuable enough that, you know, if all he is a garbage bucket and, you know, around the rim guy, I think that's fine. In terms of Justin Anderson, I actually liked, I think for Justin Anderson, I haven't paid a ton of attention to Mavs the last couple of years. So when that part of it was announced, I was like, oh, Justin Anderson, he's pretty good. Like, I remember him being a decent prospect. And then when I, like, delved deeper into it, it seemed like a guy who had sort of fallen off since being drafted, or at least since his rookie year, and hadn't taken the next step. I mean, you guys can tell me more about your thoughts on Justin Anderson, but it seemed like he'd kind of fallen out of favor in Dallas from where he was early on. He's just kind of the same as a lot of guys the Sixers have had in recent years, like toolsy wings who theoretically can defend and, you know, do stuff in transition or create turnovers and can't shoot at all. And the Sixers have had a lot, like, they've had Jakar Sampson and Jeremy Grant and KJ McDaniels. It kind of seems like that same type of player. And I think Justin Anderson's a higher caliber of that, but I think people maybe are there's a fatigue on that type of player because we've seen it not really pan out a handful of times in recent years.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that sort of comparison. I compared him to Robert Covington. Now, I don't really watch the Sixers as much, obviously, as much as you do. But just sort of that guy that has the appearance that he can shoot. But then once you kind of get into it, you're like, well, maybe not as good as people thought. I mean, he's shot 40% from three in college. But then in the NBA, he gets streaky. You know, he's sort of one of those 35% shooters where he shoots really, really good for a stretch, and then he just won't hit a three for four games. What really did him in for the Mavericks, and Carlisle and Brett Brown are going to be different in this respect, that Justin Anderson started making mistakes, and Rick Carlisle doesn't take that. Like, he doesn't take guys making a ton of mistakes, and so he decided to bench him for what Chris Axman calls an NBA 2K create-your-own player in Dorian Finney-Smith. And he doesn't really make mistakes at all, because he doesn't risk anything. But Justin Anderson, he'll risk stuff. You know, like, he'll go after those tip dunks. He'll, you know, and those have been great this year. I mean, just exciting plays seeing that. And then defensively, I mean, yeah, he's pretty solid. I think he can defend a couple positions, and he'll be good on that regard. So it's not terrible. He's not an awful player. He should be in a rotation for the next, you know, 8 years in the NBA or so.
Yeah, Max, another thing with that, too, is that he's the type of guy where, kind of like Nick said, he takes risks, but it's one of those things where it's hit or miss. When he hits it, you love it, but when you miss it, it can be detrimental to the team a little bit, because it can be a costly mistake. And Rick Carlisle doesn't play that, especially from younger guys. Carlisle's very strict on young guys, so that's another reason, or that's a Philly might deal with that a little bit differently, but obviously that would remain to be seen.
Yeah, so with your assessment on Nerlens Noel, I mean, offensively, he was taking a ton of jumpers before the only home game he's played so far was that game against the Pelicans with Boogie and the Brow, which was an interesting game to watch. All those Kentucky bigs on the same floor. But he took like 200 or so jumpers before the game. He was one of the first ones out there just taking jumper after jumper. Is he one of those guys that knows who he is and wants to be a rim runner, lob catcher, or is he trying to, you know, do too much and step out and shoot jumpers?
You know, I'll say that he's not, as someone who watched a lot of Samuel D'Alembert as a Sixers fan in the 2000s, he's not that. He's not this guy who, or, you know, Alexis Vezhenka or something. He's not like a guy who thinks he's something he's not.
Yeah.
I will say that, like, early in his career, he talked a lot about wanting to model his game after Kevin Garnett, which I thought was really funny just because he's nothing like Kevin Garnett at all.
Yeah.
And defensively, for some reason, like, that was a player growing up in Boston he looked up to. And every summer he's kind of worked on that. And he in that season, he missed his first year. He basically rebuilt his jumper.
Interesting.
Like, changed his form entirely. He used to shoot, like, this weird... He would, like, arch his back and kind of fling the ball, like, almost like Manute Bol. Like, his hands would be straight up in the air and just fling the ball.
Manute.
And he's improved in that regard. Like, his jumper looks a lot better, and it's smoother. His free-throw percent is better. But I don't think he's going to become that ever. That, you know, I don't think he's ever going to become a guy you want to see taking mid-range shots. But he has improved that. And I didn't think there was ever a point during his Sixers career where he was just taking a lot of bad shots. Or trying to do too much.
Yeah, and the other thing that I want to talk about with Nerlens Noel is the off the court stuff. You mentioned earlier where he talked about how he was sort of unhappy. They had three centers. I remember there was a point in the season where the big quote, I think it was like one of the national headlines, was that we have three centers and I'm averaging 8 minutes a game. You know, this something's got to give eventually. And he did end up getting more minutes. And then a report came out today that he was 10 minutes late for the team flight. Carlisle was upset about it. There could be some other rumors floating around that he's been late to other Mavs things. Is this something that we're going to see from Nerlens Noel, the off the court? You know, is he like a disgruntled player? Is he just a guy that is, you know, doesn't believe in alarm clocks? You know what I mean? Like,
you know, it's funny because that was a thing. Him being late to stuff was something I heard a lot from a lot of different people.
Oh,
and
wow.
It never became an issue for the Sixers, or it never became an issue that fans knew about or that was highly publicized. I think just because of the way the team treated it, like, he was never benched for missing a practice or being late to anything. But that was constantly something I heard when people would talk about his future with the team, that he was just sort of tough to deal with in that regard, and people felt like he was entitled or whatever. Wow. Dealing with him personally, I always really liked him. I never had, I think he's a likable guy. Like I said, I don't think he is, I think he knows his role and is like a tough player and wants to be I have to respect like any player drafted that high who really wants to be a defensive specialist like that.
Yeah, right.
But there is this weird part of him where that has been a consistent issue, specifically him missing stuff. I was really surprised to see it happen so quickly with the Mavs. And maybe it was happening more than we even realized. But if it happened a week into his career with the Mavs and, you know, it was something I was hearing about, like, vaguely, I would imagine it was probably happening a lot with the Sixers then.
Yeah, and that's definitely not something that Carlisle, again, is not gonna take, you know. And he's used to coaching veteran players. Obviously, the Mavs have been, you know, Harrison Barnes said it the other night that they were the 30 and over club when he got there. And now the Mavs are taking this youth movement, and these are going to be some of the growing pains. You bring in these young guys that aren't used to being as disciplined, or, you know, they're used to in college where they, like, give you breaks or whatever because they know that, like, oh, you're just a college student. Like, you know, he's guy's only 19. But now you're in the NBA, you're a professional. Do you think that Nerlens Noel is going to have, maybe you wouldn't know this answer, but is going to have an issue with discipline, or is this just a thing that he's just going to have to work through and he'll be okay with it?
I wouldn't be too concerned. I mean, again, like, I don't know what the extent of the issue was and how much that played into their decision to move on from him. I think the biggest reason they moved on from him was just the additional overload, although I think Okafor is gone no matter what at some point. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think the weird thing that got blown up over, I think it was last summer this came out, the whole thing about him like trashing his old apartment. I don't know if that's something that like Mavs fans have talked about at all. But there was this like he'd moved out of an apartment, and TMZ had this whole thing where like his ex-landlord was suing him for all this money because he's like totally trashed the place and whatever. It's like that seems like pretty normal NBA 22-year-old behavior, honestly. Like that was kind of surprising that blew up so much. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say exactly about just being unreliable, because that is something that's been consistent, and I don't really know why. And even, I mean, I saw a thing today. I think one of the Philadelphia writers was talking about that was going to happen even in Noel's first season when he wasn't playing at all. He would miss practices or show up late. So I don't know what the deal is with that.
Yeah, right. So the last thing I want to bring up with you and is Joel Embiid. Now, on this podcast, I have been known to love me some Joel Embiid.
It's like a weird obsession.
I trust the process.
Oh, boy.
He was shut down for the season. I think earlier today, I think that report came out. And in the words of our president, that is sad, exclamation point. That is
wrong.
Just very sad.
No, it is sad.
At this point in the season, I think that even if he doesn't play, which he's not going to, and all these other rookies do their best, that Joel Embiid's still going to win Rookie of the Year. Thoughts?
I think he should. And here's the analogy somebody made that I really liked. Because you look also at the competition. Like, if you had a Jabari Parker or a... I don't even want to say an Andrew Wiggins, because I think that would be an actual conversation. But, like, if you had another rookie who was having a somewhat decent season... And I think the closest thing is Brogdon and Saric. And both of them are having nice seasons, but nothing... I mean, they would be two of the worst Rookie of the Years, I think. If they continue on the way they're playing, if either of those guys won, they'd be maybe the worst Rookie of the Year in modern history.
Oof.
And Embiid's, like, doubling up their production in half the minutes. It's, you know, one, he played 31 minutes, and two, he was playing, 25 minutes a game, but like overall in his 31 games, like averaging 20 points, leading in pretty much every category. I think he should get it. I think he probably won't, just because 31 is really low. When he got hurt, I was like, okay, if he comes back and even plays half the rest of his games, he's a shoo-in. There's something about him only playing 31, having been on it. I think a big thing was hurt him in terms of his push for the All-Star game was this narrative of the minutes restriction, because in reality he was playing 25 minutes a game and almost 30 minutes a game by the time the All-Star game came around, but I think people had this image in their head that maybe didn't watch the Sixers as much, that he was only playing like half of the normal minutes, that he was missing every other game, which wasn't really true. He was, you know, playing 75-80% of their games and, you know, was second or third on the team in minutes played in those games. So I think he should. I just think the narrative's going to be really strong for him to not make it. You'd have to be by far the fewest number of minutes for any player who's ever won Rookie of the Year by, like, half, I feel like. So I'm hoping that Saric has been awesome in the last month or so. Yeah, he's averaging, like, 17, 8, and 3 in February, or he did in February. So, and he's, you know, since the break when they traded Ersan Ilyasova, he's been starting and he's been even better. So my hope is that he kind of pulls ahead and it can at least be another Sixer, because it seems so clear that Embiid was going to get it. But I'm actually not that confident that Embiid gets it, just because I know how media members vote, and they vote based on narrative a lot of times. The narrative is going to be really negative about Embiid.
And Max, that's what I was trying to tell Nick is that I know he loves Joel Embiid. I like Joel Embiid too. He's a really, really good player. But to me, this is the Derek Carr of the NBA right now. Like, Derek Carr in football, he was a MVP candidate. He could have won if he had stayed healthy. But the thing is, there's still a quarter of the season left to go. And if Joel Embiid's not there, you can't give it to the guy. You just can't.
He was that good, though. He doesn't need the rest of those games.
He's really good.
I'll take your Derek Carr comparison, and I'll give you a Tom Brady. He doesn't need the other four games.
No,
he can be in the conversation
without
the other four.
No, don't you dare compare that man to Tom Brady.
That ain't happening. I'm sorry. He's a really good player, and I like him, and I see a lot of good things coming from him. But to compare Joel Embiid to arguably the best player in football history, not happening.
He could be the best player in NBA
history.
When he becomes a point guard, he'll become. Sorry to bring you in the middle of this, Max.
Yeah, we had to.
That's okay. Here's what I will say, though. Embiid and Saric is number one in points with 667. Embiid's at 627. Saric has played about double the minutes Embiid has and has 44 points. And then Brogdon's after that. I think it's kind of the analogy somebody made, the one I was going to say earlier. Imagine you were a part-time employee at Apple. You work 20 hours a week selling stuff and selling computers and iPhones and whatever, and you work off commission, which I don't think Apple does, but for the sake of this analogy, you
right.
do. Employee A works 20 hours a week, sells $40,000 worth of merchandise and $10,000 worth of Apple Care and Genius Bar appointments and whatever. Employee B works 40 hours a week and sells $5,000 more of merchandise and $500 more of Genius Bar and whatever. Like, is the employee of the month the second guy or the first guy? And I feel like it should be the first guy. Like, just in terms of production, like, do I really care if this guy worked half the hours? We pretty much did the exact same job in half the time this other person did, which is basically what it's going to be. I mean, like, if you look at the raw stats, come, you know, mid-April, Dario Saric, assuming he continues at this pace, is going to have like 10 or 15% more of in terms of points, and probably be even in terms of rebounds, and have a worse shooting percentage, worse three-point percentage, gotten to the line less,
and defensively.
Way less defensive impact. Like, if you look at Embiid, I think if you consider offense and defense, I think at the end of the year, Brogdon and Saric will have done less in significantly more minutes, about double or even triple the minutes. Will have impacted, probably, maybe win shares would be the stat you look at, but will have affected less winning basketball than Embiid did in a third of the time.
Joel Embiid is also leading in the category of winning over the hearts of basketball fans all across America.
AKA you.
And the world. Max Rappaport, thanks so much for joining us, man. You sold me at least on the Joel Embiid Apple
Care.
Man,
my pinky told you on sold you on Joel Embiid. You're in love with the guy.
Thank you
it's
so much,
secret
Max.
Man crush.
Thanks for joining us. We'll argue this when you're gone.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Max.
Bye.
Yeah.
So there we go. That was Max Rappaport. Joel Embiid should win the Rookie of the Year, for sure.
I'm gonna go Donald Trump. Wrong. I like him a lot. He's really good.
I don't think you like him that much.
No, I do, but you just have an obsession with the man.
He's just so good. The Sixers were a respectable, good NBA team when he was on the floor. To be able to turn a negative into a positive. When he was on the floor, they were a respectable team. They were above.
No, he was a
baseball
really...
Baseball has the Mendoza line. I guess that we're going to have like the Sixer line.
Oh, God. No, he was a really good player on a... Maybe
on an awful team.
Yeah, he was
in an awful team, but
on
he made that awful team good, though.
No,
or at least
no
average.
Let me tell you something. And I know he's a rookie, but LeBron James on Cleveland.
LeBron James
on Cleveland the first time was a great player on a bad team. Allen Iverson on the Sixers back in the day was a great player on a bad team. Joel Embiid is a really good player and has a lot of chance to grow. Real chance. But to say that he just made them so much better, it's not like they weren't even a playoff team. So it's not that he made them that much better. They played better under him. I get it because he's a really good player. But it's not that he was scaring teams out the water when he was on the court.
All right, so we've done enough of the Joel Embiid stuff. He's not even playing. Let's talk about a guy that is actually
your
playing.
Man crush. I'm going to start calling that Joel Embiid, your man crush.
I trust the process.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Oh, and I didn't talk to him. Well, so Nerlens Noel, the stuff that he said about Nerlens being late to stuff, that was a problem in Philly that we didn't hear about.
Right. He better not do that here.
Yeah, right. And apparently he's already done it once, maybe another time with what were, you know, rumors and stuff that are flying
hopefully
around.
It'll be a learning process and Carlisle will get to him quick, because remember, Max also brought up that there may have been a few players on Philly that was like, just nobody really disciplined them. So maybe him getting disciplined here, the culture's a little bit different. Maybe he'll realize and say, hey, I got to get to work.
And his comments today seemed like he was, you know, my bad, guys. You know, like, I understand I got to get better at this. This is something that, you know, I take full, you know, I guess the blame for this, which obviously, you know, he should. But we also don't know the situation. Like, maybe he's in the middle of, I mean, both of us have leased apartments and trying to figure all that stuff out and figure out where your stuff goes and all that. I mean, trying to figure that out in a new city is difficult. So, I mean, there's some growing pains at the beginning when you first get here. But if this is a problem, like, he was in Philadelphia. He was the longest standing 76er when he got traded.
Right, which is amazing because he's 22.
Right, which is kind of crazy. But he was the longest standing. And if he was still being late then and, like, disgruntled then he's coming here, and maybe that doesn't change because he didn't get a chance to grow out of that at any point.
Yeah, I don't think that he is going to be – this will be a major problem. Obviously, that remains to be seen. But, you know, he took responsibility for it. And I think, you know, some of the Mavericks – the culture is better here. I know they've gotten younger, but they still have some veteran tier. I'm sure they'll talk to him. You know, I'm sure that the influence will be like, dude, you could be a really respected guy around here. Just, you know, you can't. I know you're young, but you can't be young. You know, you've been in the league a while.
And he is. I think Dirk said that he's the youngest player on the team. He's like, I think that this guy, I think he's still the youngest player on this team, which I think he is. I mean, Nico's older than him.
How old was he when Dirk got drafted?
Gosh, well,
because he's younger than me.
Yeah, he's 2 years younger than me.
He was, what, four?
Dirk was drafted in
98.
So he would have been like six.
No. He was born, let's see, 22 years ago was what, 95?
No, he'd be younger than
that. He was three.
Oh, my gosh.
He was 3 years
Math
old.
Is not my strong suit.
That
apparently.
Is insane. Man. 3 years old.
So and his locker's right next to Dirk's.
I know.
So he's going to look at Dirk, and Dirk's, I mean, I really hope Dirk takes him under his wing.
I do too.
Not in the sense that I guess I hope he teaches him a jumper, but but I hope with the
There's
NBA stuff.
There's a reason
stuff
why what, Holger's there, right?
What if Holger just takes Nerlens under his wing?
Right? He's like, look, boy, I'm going to teach you
Nerlens
how to shoot.
Comes out and starts learning German. And
right.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that could be an issue, but with – but we're basically nitpicking right now. I mean, we're taking this in. We all loved the trade initially. You can go back and listen to episode 19 where we talked about all the stuff that we love about Nerlens Noel. And now the honeymoon phase is a little bit over. You start looking at stuff that's like, oh, we didn't know that about him. Like, oh, we didn't remember
that. Right. Well, with that.
And that's just sort of the stage we're in.
It's a marriage. You know, you get married, you learn things about your mate you didn't know when you weren't married.
I am married. I have learned things about
There you
know,
go. It's a process.
It is.
And, you know, we're a weekend. We're
and
two
I trust
games
that
in.
Process.
Yeah. It's, Yes, and I trust it too. But yes, and there will be things, but I don't think any of this will be too major. I mean, this stuff, it's small. I mean, it's big, but it's small. It's not like when Rondo got traded here or when
you have to say the name.
Yeah. Or when Lamar got traded here, or when the center that will not be named almost signed here. We heard stuff about them before. That was kind of nationally known.
Yeah.
I'm not saying being late is the right thing, but if a 19,
I hope,
20,
I would
21,
hope you weren't saying that.
22-year-old is a little bit late, I'm going to say I'm not shocked. It's like hearing about a 13 or 14-year-old boy who comes home from school who gets detention. Are you really shocked at it?
Like, we don't know what the traffic situation or the construction situation is
here
like
in Dallas,
Philadelphia.
It's terrible.
But here in Dallas, it is bad.
Worst.
I mean,
worst.
So bad.
So bad.
The traffic and the construction.
Believe me, and I will make it better.
I will have the best constructors.
Constructors?
Constructors. Yeah. But, I mean, all that being said, if that's the worst thing that we can find in Noel, that's off the court stuff. Hopefully with a better locker room. I mean,
better coaching, better culture.
There's obviously no veterans that were on the level of Dirk in Philadelphia.
No.
There was no veterans that were on the level of probably even Devin Harris a guy that's been to a championship.
Their best
JJ Barea. Even Rick Carlisle is
Philly's best veteran was when Allen Iverson would show up at games and be rooting from the stands. Best veteran.
They brought in Ersan Ilyasova and Gerald Henderson and Sergio Rodriguez, and they were like freaking out, like, "Oh, we have veterans now!" Like, guys, hold on.
What?
The absence of veterans was so glaring that they didn't even realize that.
Right.
You know. So, all right, there you go. That's our podcast today. Thanks so much for joining us on the Mavs Fanatic Podcast.
Gotta join us.
Good stuff with Max Rappaport today. Be sure to check him out.
Good guy.
We'll post the links.
Just remember, guys, I'm always right. Nick's always wrong. That's the end of the story.
Keep checking back at MavsFanatic.com. Got some really good stuff posting up there. Michael Lark always posting pictures. We got another podcast coming out in a couple days, so be sure to check up with that. And, yeah, follow us. Our Twitter accounts are written in the description of this podcast.
Spell my name right.
Spell his name right. Don't.
LMB, shout out to all the guys who tell us we have such a great podcast. We really appreciate
it. Yeah, thanks so much, everybody that's listening. And yeah, thank you guys. See you later.
Yo, everybody get up. Everybody get up. Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.